From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 28th, 2022. Your Milwaukee Bucks have three home games this week. The Knicks Friday night, the Nuggets Sunday night, and the Wizards Tuesday night. Okay, here we go. A Roomba vacuum cleaner made a break for freedom last week at a Travelodge in upstate New York. The automated vacuum failed to stop at the front door of the hotel and was on the loose for 2 days. The hotel manager said it just kept going, and luckily it has no natural predators. Who's the manager, Marlon Perkins? For the kids listening, Marlon Perkins used to host Wild Kingdom, a TV show from 100 years ago. Here's another one of those rummage sale stories in Massachusetts. A man bought a drawing for $30. It turned out to be a piece from the 16th century German artist Albrecht Dürer. It's valued at $50 million. Well, you know what they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure. From the land down under, we get this unbelievable story. Australian cops are looking for Ben Stiller, not the actor, for murdering Dwayne Johnson, not the wrestler movie star. What are the odds? This is a little unnerving. FedEx has asked the FAA for permission to add anti-missile systems to some of its cargo planes. Man, porch pirates are in for a real surprise. In Thailand, thousands of unruly monkeys are jumping on cars, mugging tourists, stealing their glasses, and ripping sugary drinks right out of their hands. Officials believe after a year-long lockdown, the monkeys are making up for lost time. Welcome to the new normal. And finally, we have a public service announcement. Krispy Kreme is giving away a dozen free donuts to everyone who donates blood to help combat the nationwide blood shortage. Hey, the line formed right behind me. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Kendall Bauer, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Well, folks, one of the more volatile weeks for the stock market that I can recall. Let's start with Monday. First time ever that the Dow sank 1,000 points only to recover in positive territory. Never happened before. Wound up 99 points for the day after being down more than 1,000. That's unbelievable. Tuesday, just a mini version of Monday, we were down almost 820 points in the morning to close just down 66 points. I'll take that. Wednesday, we dropped 129 points. Thursday, down 7. And today, late afternoon rally in the markets, took the Dow 565 points higher. What a great rebound. Well, NASDAQ for the week traded even, up just a little 2 points, closed at the bell at 13,771. The broader markets, S&P stock composite 500, up 0.8 of a percent, adding 34 points to close at 4,432. Dow Jones Industrial Average actually added 461 points this week, up 1.3%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 34,726. Dow still down 4.4 for the year. Broader markets down 7 for the year. And the NASDAQ down 12% since the beginning of the year. You know, Kyle, one of the first things I ever learned in managing money professionally was don't fight the Fed. You're well aware what that means. You know, when the Federal Reserve is in an accommodative mood where they're lowering interest rates, increasing the money supply, stocks do pretty well most of the time. So the Fed this week acknowledged that they achieved their objectives. Number one, full employment. You know, the unemployment rate at 3.9%. They think that's full employment right now. And then number two, they wanted to get inflation higher than 2%. They easily accomplished that objective. You know, so now the Fed is changing directions, and typically that causes volatility in the stock market. CBOE VIX index has doubled this year so far. So volatility is definitely on the increase after the Fed's decided now that they're going to raise, not in June, but now in March, the middle of March, and that they could come more often. Kyle, I was intrigued by the comment that Jerome Powell, the chairman, made at the end of the meeting, saying that I think there's quite a bit of room to raise interest rates without threatening the labor market. You know, it got me to thinking about the labor market relative to COVID and assuming, knock on wood, right, if the Omicron numbers keep coming down, maybe this is wishful thinking, but the COVID, you know, could be behind us later in the year. And you got to wonder what that's going to do to the labor market, if it's safer to be in hospitality, it's safer to be out in retail with the public. That could potentially complicate the Fed's moves. But for now, you got to respect the Fed. They're going to get their way. Jerome Powell made it clear that he's got plenty of room to raise rates without threatening the labor market or worrying certainly about deflation. And I think that's going to kind of dictate the terms of the stock market here until they get their way.
And of course, I think as you look at some of the volatility that we saw again this week, yeah, we got positive numbers to finish the week, but it came in such a helter-skelter manner, right? It came with that huge down opening on Monday, followed by a pretty swift recovery, a couple of up days in there that ended up down. And then, you know, I think we finished the week quite strong. I think it's too early to say it's a comeback for stocks, because certainly there's plenty to be concerned about out there. There's plenty to kind of keep your eye on, whether it's the Russian-Ukraine situation that's developing, whether it's kind of the continuation of Omicron, or whether it's, you know, simply keeping an eye on what the Fed is doing. Of course, you know, the Wall Street Journal had an excellent quote that they ran in an article that will show up in the newspaper over the weekend, but showed up online today from the father of value investing, Benjamin Graham, who essentially said he knows less and less what the market is going to do and more what investors ought to do. And I think what we learned this week is that despite some of the concerns that are out there, don't underestimate, you know, investors' ability to push stocks higher. We didn't see drastic shifts in anything other than some clarity on what the Fed actually said, although we already expected much of that. And I think, you know, the reality is we got a couple of good earnings reports, especially today. And all of a sudden, investors are focused on some of the higher quality earnings names out there, some of the better performers, Apple and Visa today specifically, that have posted some pretty strong earnings numbers that were better than expectations. And I think a reminder for investors that as we get beyond some of the immediate concerns of the Federal Reserve, some of the things that are driving some of the uncertainty in the market, stocks get back to the things that matter. And, you know, I think important to stress that the earnings forecast hasn't changed all that much.
Dave, if you look at not just earnings for the year, FactSet thinks earnings going to go up 9.5%. That's above long-term average. International Monetary Fund came out the other day. They think GDP in the United States is going to be 4% this year. As you know, Dave, that's double what we experienced for the last 10 years. And then you take a look at the forward PE in the market. You know, it's not 22 anymore. It's down to 19.2, which considering how low interest rates are, that's starting to look attractive. So, you know, to me, 4% GDP, you look at earnings growth, 9.5%. Potentially for the year, forward multiple for the market at 19.2. You know, we've got this backdrop of pretty strong fundamentals.
Yeah, Bob, you're exactly right. And it's interesting because, you know, obviously the start to this year is disheartening for a lot of people. And it's, you know, tough to take a positive spin on what's going on. But we've certainly seen, you know, to your point, some of the pricing coming down. It's improved PEs. And all the while, the backdrop is still very, very strong economic growth forecast. I got a kick out of a couple articles this week, you know, kind of glooming and dooming that some of the GDP numbers were were looking, trending a little lower than originally thought. And I thought to myself, well, to your point, we're at 4%. That's a number that we haven't seen, obviously, last year eclipse at, but for a regular type of occurrence in a very long time. So real strong growth forecast there. I think you have to be somewhat positive about that. You know, I think, you know, to your earlier point about the Fed, that's where eyes are going to be, I think, for the remainder of this year. You're seeing some pretty wild forecasts coming out from some of the banks today, from anywhere from 3 increases all the way up to 7. That's a pretty big disparity in my mind. So I think that's obviously going to be a driving factor here in what we see markets do the rest of the year. And I think also to one of your other earlier points is there could be a surprise as maybe Omicron does start to wane quickly here. And we do see an influx of available candidates to work in the economy. And maybe we do improve that labor situation a little quicker than some people are thinking.
Kendall, when you look at the Fed raising rates, you know, it's normal to expect volatility. I mean, simply because the Fed, you know, forms a new huddle every month to decide what play to run, and they can't really show you their playbook for the next 2 years because they're sensitive to data that changes literally hourly. So what advice do you have for investors these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hot topic obviously is that it's been a while that we've seen any sort of market correction. And specifically the last week, we've experienced quite a bit of volatility. And so just talking to clients, you know, I think if you look back at 2021, we were pretty spoiled with some of the lack thereof of volatility. And I think that gave investors and clients, you know, a gap in time where they forgot, you know, some of the volatility that you can see in the markets. But the big thing going back to is just the importance of having that balanced portfolio, and particularly talking with investors about why it's so important to have that right mix of growth and value stocks. And you're seeing that here early on in the year with growth stocks getting pushed around quite a bit, and value stocks kind of doing what they do and holding their own. Sure, they're still down, but, you know, not as much. So I think at the end of the day, just reminding people that it's all about balance, and, you know, and try to step back when we go through corrections. We tend to get narrow focused on these, but if you step out and look at 1 year, 3 year numbers, you know, these little blips that we see or the corrections we see end up looking like little blips along a, you know, an upward trending line. So,
Joel, let's bring you into the show. GDP numbers came out for the fourth quarter, 1.7%. Full year, 5.7, best in 38 years. Pretty impressive number, Joel.
Yeah, we saw those numbers for the fourth quarter, and they capped off a strong year. They, you know, but again, it's in the perspective of, you know, we had a that deep recession at the beginning of the pandemic, and we're still bouncing back from that. We had all sorts of fiscal stimulus last year from the federal government, as far as helping out with childcare, helping out with payments to individuals and to businesses. So all of that was going on, and we're all doing this, you know, still amid a pandemic, and that's the wild card in all of this, right? We don't know how that's going to play out. I heard some people, some economists, referring to the fourth quarter, especially the month of December, as sort of a respite between the waves of the different variants for Omicron. And so we're going to see how things play out. It looked pretty good, though, from those GDP numbers. As you said, it's the best yearly growth since 1982, 84, and good things in there.
Joel, we had reports this week on manufacturing and services that they slipped late in December, early January, but also looking at durable goods orders that, you know, they actually fell first time in 3 months. That'll take a little pressure off of the supply chain bottleneck problems.
Yeah, Bob, we also had some signs, though, in the GDP report that maybe some of the supply chain problems are starting to get resolved. One of the things that led to that 6.9% growth, the annual rate of growth, was the fact that more companies are building up their inventories. So that's a good sign. And yeah, the durable goods numbers, those were off. You know, we don't want to make too much of 1 month's work. We're still, 20% ahead of where we were the year before as far as durable goods orders, which is a good sign that there's demand for manufacturing goods, and that's better than not having demand. And, you know, and again, a lot of these numbers are askew because of the pandemic. People aren't being able to go to work, or they aren't showing up to work. And, you know, that messes up everything from manufacturing to service industries. And you were talking before about Chair Powell and saying that they could raise rates without really, you know, threatening the labor market. Well, you know, we're at 3.9% unemployment rate, which the Congressional Budget Office, I think, earlier had forecast that it would be 2024 till we got down to that number. So that's a good sign that we're at 3.9% unemployment, but we also are missing a lot of workers. We're still, depending upon how you count it, 3 to 4 million workers short of where we should be right now. And again, there's a hope that as we get through the pandemic, that that we're going to have more workers come back, and that's going to help this whole growth cycle we have.
Joel, I read in so many surveys the comment that it's hard to run the business when so many of the staff call in sick, and, you know, forces you to wonder about if the Omicron infection numbers are actually starting to come down across the country. You know, are we actually going to see light at the end of the tunnel here with a pandemic that could morph into an endemic?
And Bob, I think you're reading some of the same things I'm seeing too, that suggests that more employers that are trying to get those workers back are doing things like they're providing more benefits. They're trying to figure out childcare for people who need childcare to get to work. Of course, we had news today about how they're paying more for the help. So all those things potentially could add up to good things for the economy too, because if especially at some of those lower level jobs where people spend every dollar they get practically, that's going to really help fuel the continued economic growth.
Kyle, as you know, the Federal Reserve Board has a very hard job. It's very difficult to figure out supply chain bottlenecks vis-a-vis the inflation rate. As recently as this last November, the Fed didn't think they'd need to raise short-term interest rates because of the potential easing of the bottlenecks in the supply chain. You know, they think, give or take, that 40% of the increase in inflation came from stimulus programs. Well, the fact is they're about coming to an end. They think 60% of the inflation has come because of bottlenecks in the supply chain. So again, maybe wishful thinking, but if COVID is starting to unwind here a little bit, fewer workers call in sick, able to manufacture goods, there could be some light at the end of the tunnel. Now, of course, the problem is continued lockdowns will make this worse. The problem is another variant could come along, make things worse. But you know, my guess here is that there's a very real likelihood that the experts aren't going to be right. You know, the forecast still is for inflation to finish the year somewhere between 2.5% to 3%. If that happens, you know, the point simply is the Fed's not going to have to continuously raise interest rates way into next year, and the market will get back to some semblance of normalcy.
What I appreciate about that conversation is the 60% that the estimate of, you know, the bottlenecks impact on inflation, it wasn't strictly supply side constraints. It was also changing demand, in particular, as we look at service sector spending, things like travel spending, eating out, hotels, you know, the pieces that people really cut off immediately when the pandemic began, And that we've only, you know, recently seen start to recover some pre-pandemic levels in many areas, if at all. The saving grace may be that when you listen to many of the airline execs talk, when you listen to some of the hotel executives talk, they really do believe that later this year, as this Omicron wave begins to play out, that we get back to some of the more service-based spending that we've done in the past. And so not only now do we have a reprieve from some fixing of some bottlenecks, bottleneck issues. Joel mentioned some of the buildup in inventory earlier, but you also have a reversion back to a more typical demand pattern where it's easy to pull a plane out of, you know, the boneyard in Arizona, out of the desert, get it flying again. Yeah, you need a couple of employees to fly that plane. You need a few more to staff, you know, for safety purposes. But that's a significant amount of spend that could come out of kind of the goods bucket that we've been chasing for so long and go into the services bucket that's a little easier to ramp up supply in. You know, it's easy enough to bring hotel rooms back online. It's easy enough to bring restaurants back online. And if anything, I think we have seen a number of, you know, fairly entrepreneurial folks starting up restaurants as we start to make the way out of this pandemic. I've seen, you know, anecdotally, a number of new storefronts open up near me. But as you look at some of the things that have happened, you know, since the pandemic began, you know, the number of small businesses that have started is significant. And so I think to the extent that we can rely on not just the Fed tamping down on some excess demand in the form of, you know, raising interest rates, but also kind of a change in that demand and an improvement in, you know, the supply constraints that have been out there. Now we've got a couple of pieces that are working against kind of the longer term trend of inflation, I think, that are going to work in the Fed's favor. That doesn't mean that we don't see the three or four increases that, you know, Dave, many of those, you know, bank execs were talking about, but maybe it's not seven. And so I think as we get further into spring, you start to narrow the range for what those expectations should be. And all of a sudden, you know, the volatility that's been persistent because we just don't know what's going to happen. I think the range of outcomes starts to narrow the further along this goes. And so I think that's going to be a really positive thing for investors. I think it's an important consideration as we look at kind of some of the challenges right now is, you know, it's largely an issue of time. And if we put enough time between us and some of what's going on right now, you know, I think the outcomes become a little clearer.
Thank you for those comments. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.